We should take over the voting in at least many, 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting.
One of the things that's been frustrating to me is that people are treating this as a hypothetical. Will Trump interfere in the 2026 elections when it's already happening?
This morning, we are learning more about why the FBI raided Fulton County's elections hub in Union City and seized hundreds of boxes of 2020 election records.
There has been a dramatic escalation in the war on voting. In just the few weeks since I spoke to Ari Berman last, there's no one who knows more about voting rights, and I wanted to talk to him about a story that he just wrote in Mother Jones, and you should read the whole story. But let me just ask, Ari, what is going on in Fulton County, Georgia, and how seriously should we take it?
Very seriously. I think the raid of 700 boxes of ballots and election records from the 2020 election in Fulton County, Georgia, which is the largest county in Georgia, home to Atlanta, is a prelude for what they want to do everywhere they can in 2026 and 2028.
The federal government should get involved. These are agents of the federal government to count the votes.
When Trump said, we want to take over the voting in at least 15 places, he definitely had Fulton County on his mind.
Trump then listed a number of Democrat-led cities like Detroit and Atlanta, where he thinks the federal government should step in.
The seizure of the ballots was the first step in this process because a lot of people thought it was backwards looking.
When I heard they were taking the name Fort Bragg off, I said, no, they're kidding. That's not gonna do. They did. They took the name off.
And I'm sure some of it is backwards looking and ego soothing and all the things that always happen with Trump.
We got it back very quickly, but they took it off.
To me, it was more forward looking, which is how can they weaponize the taking of the ballots and the lies for the 2020 election and use them to their favor in the future.
And if we don't win the midterms, they'll take it off again. They'll take it off again. You can't let that happen.
One of the things that's unique about Fulton County is there's actually a mechanism for Republicans to take over there, to do exactly what they want that doesn't exist in other places, because there was a 2021 voter suppression law passed by the Georgia legislature after Trump tried to overturn the election. One of the things it did was it gave the state election board there the power to take over up to 4 county boards that have used as quote-unquote underperforming. That state election board has a MAGA majority.
Republican State Senator Greg Dolezal says he wants the state elections board to take over Fulton County elections.
Remember, in the run-up to the 2024 election, they tried to change the laws in all sorts of ways to make election certification optional, for example, which a lot of people viewed as this was the first step to challenging the result of the election if Trump lost. So you could have a situation where the state election board, which has a MAGA majority, thanks to Trump, could take over and sideline the local board of elections, which has a Democratic majority in Fulton County, Georgia.
It is past time for the state to take over Fulton County elections.
Then they could appoint someone they want to run elections in Georgia's largest county instead. And then they can do things like purge people from the rolls, close polling places, cut early voting, potentially contest election outcomes. All the things Trump wants to do could actually become possible if this takeover ultimately happens.
That comment drew a sharp rebuke from Fulton County Commission Chair Rob Pitts.
We will fight with every resource available to us to defend our elections and the rights of the people who reside in Fulton County, who live in Fulton County, who vote in Fulton County.
Taking the ballot just helps create a pretext to do all that, or is there something else I'm missing?
Yeah, I think it just creates a pretext, which is that they're going to say, like, we have the proof now. We have the ballots. We have evidence of fraud. They're going to spin all sorts of elaborate conspiracies.
One of the debunked claims listed in the affidavit comes from a so-called citizen researcher named Joe Rossi, who claimed that the number of ballot images for Fulton County did not match the full total number of ballots cast. But the state of Georgia did a machine and hand recount of the ballots and confirmed the tally.
I mean, that's why Tulsi Gabbard was there, to spin some kind of elaborate conspiracy to Trump about Venezuela infiltrating the 2020 election.
Conspiracist host Alex Jones told his audience this.
It's about Venezuela being the base of election fraud.
The core of this conspiracy theory goes like this. Venezuela stole the 2020 election for Joe Biden by controlling voting machines used in the United States.
Or something of that nature.
And what What is the latest on what we understand why Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, was there perhaps overseeing this operation? At least what we know is she provided the cell phone for the FBI agents who went in and took the 700 boxes to speak directly with the president of the United States.
That would then convince them that elections are so crooked, the federal government has no choice to take over.
Well, that was another really big question after reading the affidavit, was why was Tulsi Gabbard there? Because the director of national intelligence is prohibited by law from participating in domestic law enforcement operations.
Or elections are so crooked that our allies in the states have to take over, right?
Her only portfolio with regards to elections would be stopping foreign interference in the elections. And the affidavit didn't make any allegations of foreign interference in the 2020 election in Fulton County, let alone provide evidence of that.
And a lot of people are saying, well, Trump can actually do this. He can actually nationalize the voting. And we'll see. We'll see ultimately what he tries to do and whether it's successful.
Richard Hassan is the director of the Safeguarding Democracy Project at the UCLA School of Law.
There's a lot of limits on what he can do under the Constitution.
We've had multiple courts say the president has no role to play. So there's no official role in the Constitution for the president when it comes to running elections in this country.
But particularly in Fulton County, there's something they actually can do.
Atlanta Democrat Syra Draper criticized proposed state takeover.
If you control Fulton County, you can pretty much control the outcome of all statewide races in Georgia. And I'm not surprised that I have Republican counterparts who are pushing for that outcome.
Which is they can take over the local election board, sideline the Democrats on that board, and give that power to someone who's beholden to the election deniers on the state election board who ultimately answer to Trump and the election denier movement that he is now leading.
We trust the courts to stand up against the election deniers, the politicization of the Department of Justice, and the violation of civil rights. And in this instance, in my view, based on this affidavit, the magistrate judge just failed to do that. I mean, what this affidavit that supports the search warrant contains is frankly just repackaged lies from 2020.
The term that gets thrown around a lot is doomerism, and you know, this very smart people have pointed out exactly what you just said, is that he can't do very much. He can't do a lot, but then the connection here to Fulton is Georgia has basically figured out end runs, not just around the Democrats, but also around the few responsible Republicans, because those are the people who ultimately saved the 2020 certification in Georgia. It had to be because the Republicans are in charge of everything. Is there any other places that this could happen in? So, you know, we definitely have to worry about John Ossoff's Senate seat could be crucial. I mean, if it's just that, that's a huge determinant in for this election. What are the other places of the 15 that we might want to look at?
Well, let me just go back to Georgia for a second, yeah. Because one of the most disturbing things was that in the aftermath of the seizure of 700 boxes of ballots and election records, no prominent Republicans in Georgia spoke out to denounce it. I kept waiting for Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, the guy who supposedly stood up to Trump and declined his demand to find 11,780 votes to reverse Biden's victory. I mean, he didn't say anything for days about this.
Nearly a week after federal agents raided Fulton County's elections hub, we're hearing from Georgia's Secretary of State for the first time.
And when he did,
it's kind of interesting that it's today's Groundhog Day.
It was a very, very weak statement. He is now running for governor, so he is loath to try to cross Trump.
No details were provided to us or to the press or to Fulton County.
His top aide, Gabriel Sterling, who gave all of this testimony in the aftermath of the 2020 election, denouncing Trump's lies.
Mr. President, it looks like you likely lost the state of Georgia. We're investigating. There's always a possibility. I get it. And you have the rights to go through the courts. What you don't have the ability to do, and you need to step up and say this, is stop inspiring people to commit potential acts of violence. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get shot. Someone's going to get killed.
He did not speak out about this. He is now running for Secretary of State. He does not want to cross Trump.
It's not right. I, it's not right.
So even the people that spoke, even the few Republicans that spoke out against Trump for one reason or another in 2020, they stayed silent about this. We didn't hear anything from the governor, Brian Kemp, denouncing what was an extraordinary abuse of law enforcement power. And if I could just make one more point about this doomerism debate that's happening. One of the things that's been frustrating to me is that people are treating this as a hypothetical. Will Trump interfere in the 2026 elections when it's already happening?
I'm Michael Waldman, president and CEO of the Brennan Center for Justice.
You already have ICE terrorizing blue states and blue cities.
This past weekend marked a turning point for our country. We all have been part of it.
You already have the DOJ demanding voter rolls and sensitive personal data in response, basically as extortion, to try to get ICE to leave these places.
The nation has been convulsed by the shooting on Saturday of Alex Preti, following the shooting of Renee Good the week before by federal immigration forces.
You already have Trump seizing the ballots from 2020.
There's another outrageous statement by a cabinet official that I think has not gotten enough attention. Attorney General Pam Bondi sent a remarkable letter to the governor of Minnesota in which she appeared to link the violence over ICE with a demand for the voter rolls of the state.
All of these things could suppress votes, and it's very possible they're suppressing votes right now. There are people that may not want to show up because they're afraid of ICE or because they don't want their information shared with the federal government or they don't want a supposedly secret ballot to be taken by the FBI.
I'm really pleased to be joined by my colleague, Wendy Weiser. She's our vice president for democracy here at the Brennan Center for Justice.
So I would argue that election interference is already taking place. It could get dramatically worse. But it's not a hypothetical anymore.
That was really shocking that in response to this killing, the attorney general asked for Minnesota to turn over all of the sensitive voter data that it maintains on the voter files. And this isn't the first time they asked for this, and this isn't the only place they asked for it.
Trump is interfering with the 2026 election.
Now, she doesn't say explicitly, we will stop killing your civilians if you give us your voter records. But that sure is the implication. And that is how people in Minnesota have taken it. That is how public officials in Minnesota have taken it.
He is using the full weight of the federal government to interfere.
The federal government has no authority to require Minnesota to turn over these voter rolls.
Certainly not at gunpoint. I mean, this is part of something much bigger.
And I think if it was treated that way, we would be having a very different conversation.
This is, I fear, going to be used not only for further intrusions in the election, but for further deployments of ICE and CBP. So it is circular that they are going to use their discovery of non-citizens on the voter rolls to justify these kinds of what I believe are unlawful deployments.
The other thing I would say about this debate is that Trump pushes things to the limit. He pushes things to the extreme.
We have to win this election, most important election ever.
We saw that in 2020. He took this thing as far as it would go. He took it as far as it would go in the courts. When he failed in the courts, we had an insurrection. And then not only that, but he basically systematically assembled the government in his second term so there would be no one who could stand up to him to say no in these kind of situations.
In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
There would be no one at the Pentagon or the Director of National Intelligence or the Justice Department or the Department of Homeland Security that would tell him no when he wanted to do things like seize the voting machines or crazy ideas like that.
Among today's false prophets are the election deniers who indulge this president's obsession with overturning the 2020 election.
So if Trump's going to push things to as far extreme as possible, people that want to counter him have to think that way as well. So they're not caught off guard, because a lot of people were caught off guard by what happened in 2020. And I personally don't want to make that same mistake again.
Now, hear me when I say this. They tell a lie so absurd and therefore so debasing to tell that the act of telling it proves the teller's total and humiliating submission.
So when Trump says these things, like, yes, we have to be realistic. We don't want to unfairly panic people, but we also have to understand we're dealing with someone that's going to take this as far as it can go and will think as expansively as possible. And so when they say things like, we're going to declare a national emergency to try to take over local running of elections, when we're going to send ICE to the polls.
You're damn right. We're going to have ICE surround the polls come November.
We're going to nationalize the voting. I take those things very seriously because people, either Trump or people close to him, are now saying them out loud. And that's exactly what happened in 2020.
You know, and I always hoped he had come around on this.
Everybody sees these special elections and says, oh, well, Democrats are, things are looking good for Democrats. The urgency for making this happen is now greatly increased by Democratic overperformance.
Exactly. I mean, as they become more unpopular and as their hold on power gets more and more tenuous, then they're going to do everything they can to try to hold on to power by any means necessary.
The clear majority, 56%, say no, 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 no. They do not believe that Donald Trump is committed to free and fair elections.
And you know, we saw it first with the gerrymandering, the unprecedented mid-decade gerrymandering. That, by and large, should not work out like Trump wanted it to.
We're talking about 2 in 3 independents say, no, Donald Trump is not committed to free and fair elections.
So now he's on to other methods. They're trying to do it in Congress with the SAVE Act.
What is the SAVE Act?
Basically making their voter suppression bill even worse and leaning on the Senate to somehow pass it.
It would be, if passed, the worst voter suppression bill ever passed by Congress, because it has sweeping new restrictions on voting. And it comes at a time when President Trump says he wants to take over the voting process and nationalize voting. And this bill would nationalize new restrictions on voting in a few different ways.
I don't think that's going to happen, but we have to, you know, take it seriously. The Fulton County raid probably is not going to end in Fulton County. You said, you know, what other places could Trump do this? I mean, he's going to try to do it in any state in which he lost, where there's competitive elections in 2026 or 2028, where he feels like he can do it. And he's going to need local enablers.
There was a criminal referral from Kurt Olson, a temporary White House employee with the title of Director of Election Security and Integrity. Can you tell us a little bit more about Olson?
He's going to need people on the ground to be able to pull this off.
Kurt Olson is not a household name, but he was a leader of the Stop the Steal movement in 2020. He tried to persuade the Justice Department to file a lawsuit before the Supreme Court overturning the election. Texas eventually filed that. That was unsuccessful. He talked to Trump numerous times on January 6th during the insurrection. He then became part of Republican gubernatorial candidate Kerry Lake's campaign in 2022 in Arizona. He was sanctioned by a federal court for making false claims about the election. He has been traveling around the country making false claims about the election with the likes of Mike Flynn, Mike Lindell, Steve Bannon.
You're damn right.
And that's the concerning thing about Fulton County. There's this whole network of election deniers that seem to feed information to the DOJ, feed information to the FBI, that laid the groundwork for this FBI raid.
That's what was so shocking about the Fulton County affidavit, was it recycled so many lies about the 2020 election that have been thoroughly debunked in court, in Georgia, by investigators all across the country. And the fact that this stuff is still being used 5 years later by people at the White House to persuade the FBI and a state judge to take 700 boxes of ballots is really astonishing.
But you would imagine it's going to happen other places. You imagine it's going to happen in Michigan and in Arizona and in Nevada and in other places where they have a lot to lose and also election deniers on the ground.
So the optimistic story is they're just kind of spinning out more conspiracy theories.
So we'll see what happens. We'll see what Republicans do at the state level. We'll see what Republicans do at the county level. But I would not expect this to be limited to what happens in Fulton County, Georgia.
The pessimistic theory is that they're going to use the intelligence apparatus, the federal government. We saw the FBI raid on the Fulton County offices as a kind of test run, a pretext for potentially trying to seize ballots or vote tabulating machinery or election machinery as votes are supposed to be tabulated in the 2026 election.
The gerrymandering, the mid-decade redistricting that Trump called for, that ended up looking like now, the best estimates, because of what's going on in Virginia, that at least it's at least a wash and maybe net positive for Democrats. So to me, that kind of is the model of taking it seriously. It wasn't just the Democrats escalated the rhetoric to fight this gerrymandering stuff. Gavin Newsom you know, with all those other problems, but thought completely out of the box, went straight for it, had no hesitation. What are the steps that Democrats can do that are kind of akin to what happened in that redistricting fight, if there's anything?
Well, I think the Democratic elected officials have to use whatever power they have, particularly at the state level, because elections are ultimately run by the states.
So I think everyone on the state and local level needs to be on guard.
So Trump's going to have to go in to the states and go into swing districts if he wants to ultimately interfere.
And the idea that we have to be on guard against interference by the federal government in the fairness of elections shows you just how much American democracy has deteriorated in the last decade.
The thing is, we may have seen that the president has expansive power with immigration. His powers with regards to elections are much more limited.
There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution that gives the president, the executive, any power over running elections.
I would urge all the local Democratic officials, whether it's the governor or the attorney generals or the secretaries of state or the county boards, that they have to be thinking proactively about how to protect their elections.
It's the letter being compared to a shakedown and ransom note. They point to a list of demands that the attorney general, Pam Bondi, sent to the governor on the day Alex Preddy was killed. The response from Minnesota's secretary of state was swift and simple. No. He joins me now.
And I'm sure they are, but I think we need to see more of it. And I think they also need to see more publicly so that people have confidence in the election.
They don't need this data, and federal and state privacy laws, we maintain, say that they don't get that data.
Also, Democrats are not going to be able to do this alone.
My Republican colleagues agreed as well that what was happening in Georgia was so outrageous.
One of the reasons that the 2020 election held ultimately under an incredible amount of stress was that Republicans ultimately stood up.
Republican Kent County Clerk Lisa Posthumous Lyons saying adhering to the constitutional division of authority is essential to maintaining election integrity and public confidence.
Democrats are not in control everywhere, and they're not in control in a number of these key states, and they're not in control of necessarily state election boards or county election boards. And so there's going to have to be some bipartisan coalitions built here.
Barb Byram has been administering elections for over a decade. She says her office is preparing for possible federal action.
I think one of the things that happened in 2020 was people said, we can disagree on a lot of different things, but we're going to agree on the importance of running fair elections and ultimately certifying them.
I have been doing table topics exercises for my 13 years conducting elections. In the beginning, the concerns were floods or power outages. Then it moved to computers and cybersecurity. And now it has moved to what the president of the United States could do or could send to our polling locations.
You would have liked a lot more Republicans to speak out earlier in this process. The fact that the Mitch McConnells of the world did not really encourage Trump to push the system to as much of a breaking point as possible.
I don't know why we're so easily offended by a president that's carrying out all of his legal options.
But I do think that those coalitions are going to be really important to try to build. And I just think, like, if you look at the system right now, I mean, you have Democrats in prominent positions in outside of Georgia. Pretty much all the significant swing states, whether it's Michigan or Arizona or Nevada or Pennsylvania. So, I mean, they need to be very aggressive in figuring out how to Trump-proof their systems so that we don't have a situation where the FBI just rolls in to another place, takes all the ballots, seizes the voting machines, and people are seemingly caught off guard.
Byram also contends she'll fight to stop any federal incursion into Michigan elections.
I have been having conversations with lawyers to make sure that we continue to have free, safe, and fair elections.
Now, it seems like Fulton County in the days after the raid has become more aggressive, has filed lawsuits and done all of these things. But I think it needs to be more proactive in terms of what people need do right now, as opposed to just being defensive.
We are seeing, as you said, this echo of January 6th, where the Republicans, the team mentality comes when it comes to elections.
We had three House Republican candidates who were ahead on election day in the last election cycle. And every time a new tranche of ballots came in, they just magically whittled away. It looks on its face to be fraudulent. Can I prove that? No.
Their careers come first. is what you're describing when you say that Raffensperger and Kemp have completely backed off.
Well, he may call himself a constitutional lawyer, but that is one of the most asinine comments I've heard, beside coming from the president, about how our elections are run.
Their career has come first.
We've seen Trump, and now we see the Speaker of the House trying to turn this into some kind of fraudulent conspiracy. It's nothing of the sort. It's what happens when you don't have a random selection of ballots. It doesn't prove anything nefarious. All of the states that are counting the ballots have chain of custody. They're watching those ballots. You can, in many places, look on a live camera to see the ballots being stored. There's nothing going on other than it takes time to process those ballots.
Is there a way for people to put the pressure on Republicans that Democrats can't put on? How does this figure into the history that you've written so beautifully about voting rights? Is there a role for protest in all this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has to be a movement in the streets to protect voting rights and to say that we demand that our ballots, first off, we demand that our elections are held freely and fairly, and then we demand that our ballots be counted, and put pressure on elected officials and make them pay a political price for this. I mean, what happened was, you know, ICE was extremely popular among Republican constituencies, and maybe they still are. But the fact is, what happened in Minnesota changed things, and it led to an outcry.
Donald Trump, of course, wants to take the running of elections from the local communities, the local governments, and bring it up to the national government. But here's the thing. Americans believe that the elections in 2024 that were run in their community were run very well. We're talking about 69% of Americans say that the elections, in fact, in 2024 were run very well in their community.
And it wasn't just Democrats.
One Republican candidate for governor is dropping out of the race over what's happening with the federal crackdown in Minnesota.
I think that people in the streets made politicians pay attention and ultimately made there be a political cost for doing things like supporting these kind of ICE incursions.
I cannot support the National Republican stated retribution on the citizens of our state, nor can I count myself a member of a party that would do so.
When ICE comes into future communities, they're being watched by a lot more people, and they're a lot more unpopular in terms of their actions. And the whole debate about immigration and ICE has completely shifted now, from one where Republicans were very much on the offense to one where they're now very much on the defense. And the same thing needs to happen to voting.
But even Senator Kevin Cramer said it's now time for the president to start sharing information with Joe Biden.
It was past time to start a transition, to at least cooperate with the transition.
If this is like an abstract thing, if it's an inside the beltway thing, if it's a good government thing, then you're only going to reach so many people. But it has to be an issue in the midterms. I'm not worried about Trump unilaterally canceling the election. A lot of people are concerned about that. I'm not. He doesn't have the power to do that. But I am concerned about how free and fair the elections will be. And I think that the thing that everyone needs to demand before we start talking about the result of the election is, are we going to have a fair election in the first place? And that's the fight right now. And so I just think, like, in every district, in every state, in every place where this matters, candidates have to speak out about this and demand that, you know, people hold their leaders accountable. If you can't influence the federal government, you can certainly try to influence the local reps, the county reps, the state reps, and basically say, like, federalizing elections is the last thing that Republicans claim to stand for.
What is fascinating about this is that Republicans have historically said states' rights.
Correct.
And don't want the federal government involved. And now we're seeing the president kind of flip this on his head.
I mean, they spent years arguing against Democrats' attempt to try to make it easier to vote by saying that it will unfairly federalize elections. Now you have a situation where the president of the United States is basically saying, we want to nationalize the voting. We want to take over elections.
Donald Trump has flipped a lot of things on his head, but on this particular issue, the American people are most certainly not with him.
I can't think about anything that would offend small-c conservatism more than that.
What does President Trump mean when he says Republicans ought to nationalize voting? What does that look like in practice?
What the president was referring to is the SAVE Act.
In our first discussion, we talked a lot about what the Supreme Court will do in terms of the Voting Rights Act. The one thing that actually could give Trump the final advantage in the redistricting wars, is that something people still need to have on their mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, people are treating this redistricting war like it's over, but it's not.
Signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson, it's happened in 1965. It
transformed American politics. At the time, Johnston called it a triumph for freedom as huge as any victory won on any battlefield.
Huge bombshell that's still yet to be dropped by the Supreme Court.
There's now essentially one remaining pillar of the Voting Rights Act. It is Section 2. It outlaws election practices that deny or limit voting rights based on race. It applies to election practices like racial gerrymandering, ballot access, and voter registration restrictions.
If they were to basically kill the Voting Rights Act and say that majority and minority districts throughout the South and really throughout the country are no longer protected, that would allow Republicans to eliminate districts held by Democrats all across the South.
After oral arguments, several of the conservative justices signaled their willingness to strike down Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which would essentially legalize gerrymandering by race.
It could shift a dozen or more seats, up to 19 seats, in the Republican Party's favor. That would make it a lot more difficult for Democrats to take back the House. Everyone's saying it's an article of faith that Democrats are going to win the House, but I mean, there's still a lot beyond policy. There's a long way to go in even knowing which districts are going to be competitive.
Dismantling the Voting Rights Act has been a long game. Its opponents have long found a champion in the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, dating back to the 1980s. He was a young attorney in Ronald Reagan's Department of Justice. He fought against expanding the VRA.
You could have a bunch of formerly safe Democratic seats, places like Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, suddenly shifting to safe Republican seats basically overnight because of what the Supreme Court could do.
Joining me now, Ellie Mustel, justice correspondent at The Nation, where he writes about the courts and the criminal justice system.
I'm very concerned about that.
This is not about Black people, like, asking for anything. It's not about Black people asking for more than their
share. There's no favor
here. You pointed out Louisiana is a third Black. They have six congressional seats. Simple math. I mean, you don't need to be a Neil deGrasse Tyson to understand that two of six is a third, and we should do that. What the white people in Louisiana are arguing for and asking for is overrepresentation.
I'm concerned about how the Supreme Court basically giving Trump a king-like power could play into how he thinks about elections.
The Voting Rights Act requires neither a confession or an admission. White people don't have to confess to what they're doing nor admit it. We can just look at the outcomes.
It's
and that is exactly at the heart of what Roberts is trying to rip out here.
I mean, if he feels like courts aren't going to restrain him, that's going to lead him to go as far as possible, to entertain things like seizing voting machines, invoking the insurrection, declaring a national emergency, those kind of things. When people say, like, what's the danger ultimately of Trump trying to nationalize voting, that's what we're really worried about. Like, Trump basically creating a dictatorial state based on false claims of fraud. And that's going to have to be fought in a lot of different places. But one of the places it's going to be fought is in the courts. One of the reasons, I don't think the Supreme Court was ever going to go for Trump's lawsuit to try to overturn the 2020 election. But once you had so many lower courts rule against it, it became that much harder for the Supreme Court to do it. So, like, the Supreme Court can't be the first place people go. It has to be the last place people go. And there has to be no wiggle room for the justices somehow to use some sort of obscure legal theory once again to give Trump king-like power in the area where he has very little.
Get your friends, get your family, get everyone you know, and vote. Vote early, vote absentee, vote on election day. I don't care how, but you have to get out and vote.
You gave us the perfect explanation of the real concerns they have. The only thing worse than doomerism right now is denial. And if we don't have a real sense of what these threats are, we're going to be lost. So I really appreciate your time. Hopefully there's not another new radical development in the time I'm editing this that requires me to try to hunt you down again. But thank you again so much for your time. And everybody, make sure to follow Ari at Mother Jones and to continue to watch these developments, because there's going to be huge rulings and huge news coming until November, at least.
Hey, thank Jason, thanks so much for having me back. You better edit quickly.
Produced by LOL GOP Studios. Find out more at patreon.com/LOL GOP Studios.